Well, last week, we started a new book. We started the book of James, and we just looked primarily at one word and one reality, and we saw the fact that every writer of a New Testament epistle identifies himself as a slave of Christ. We talked about that term slave, how we need to redefine that. Yes, slavery has had an abusive history, but we have to remember who our master is and the kind of master that he is. And so we are invited to call Jesus Lord, which means one that is in ultimate authority and has complete ownership of our lives. And so as we walk through this book of James, we're going to be challenged to live our lives in certain ways. And I think it's appropriate that we're introduced, being reminded that we are slaves of Christ. And so we come and say, Lord, how do you want me to live my life? And so this morning, as we look at this reality of trials, we're going to hear a very simple truth from James. It's very simple. When trials come, consider it pure joy. Very simple. And very hard, right? Maybe, I don't know, for me, when trials come, that's a challenge. And so we're going to look at that today. I invite you to just follow along. James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4. It's very simple, but very profound. Here's what James invites us to. He says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know, hopefully we know, if not, may we need to know, that the testing of our faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So before we walk through the text, I'd like you to do something. You can write this down, or you can write it in your brain, however you can remember it. And we'll come back to this later, but I want you to think about what it is that's the purpose of your life, what's the ultimate, what's the goal of your life. And I don't want you to give the Sunday school answer, okay? I want a real answer. You probably heard the story of the little boy in Sunday school class, and the teacher says, what has four legs and a brown body and a bushy tail and likes nuts? And the kid raises his hand. He said, well, it must be Jesus, but it sure sounds like a squirrel. And that's kind of sometimes we kind of have, we have the classic answer. So my goal in life is to love God and enjoy Him forever. Well, that's a nice lofty goal. You probably read that somewhere. What is really the goal of your life? And here's how you can find that out. If you had the opportunity today that you could prescribe what every day would be like going into the future, just imagine that. Okay, today you can write down what tomorrow would look like, and you can prescribe what life would look like for you for the rest of your days. What would that look like? And as you look at what you would choose to be a part of the day, what does it tell you about your goal in life? So we'll come back to that. By the way, that can be a hard truth to get at. And sometimes it's revealed to you in trial. We'll talk a little bit more about that. So let's walk through the text. Then we're going to come back at the end, and I'd like to do some application. I went through a recent trial, 3 weeks with COVID, ended up for a few days in the hospital. And so at the end, what I'd like to do is lay that trial over this text and just share a little bit with you what I learned about myself in that trial and about this text. Let's walk through the text. Count it all joy when you encounter and meet trials of various kinds. Let's just jump down with me to that that word various trials. So let's start there. So what's a trial? A trial is anything that doesn't go right, or anything that's difficult or hard or painful in our lives. And James says there's various kinds of trials. What's a trial to me is not a trial to somebody else. So I love snow. I love driving in snow. So if I find out they're going to have 8 inches of snow today, that's not a trial for me. If you're a trucker, though, with a heavy load driving the Superior, that might be a trial. And so trials vary. If we had a whiteboard today and we could put it up here, and we'd probably need more than one whiteboard, and we'd had everybody come up and write down the trials going on in their lives or with people they love, I think we would be I think we would look at that board and we would go, wow, there is a lot of trial just represented in our own body here. And so trials are various. They're physical, they're emotional, they're spiritual trials. They have to do with our health and our work and our family. Every avenue of our lives, with our children, those of you who are in school, there's always trials that are going on. Even our passions wage, as Peter says, they wage war against our soul. And so we have these trials in our lives. So this morning, James is going to tell us what to do when we face trials. So how do we deal with trial? Well, here's what he says. He says, count it pure joy. That's the second point. Second phrase here, count it all joy. Count it all joy. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Now, people would have three responses to this phrase. So when a trial comes, when the hard thing comes, count it all joy. So one response is, I think, you know what, that's something I understand, and that's something I've been able to do in my life. Some people would go, that's impossible. When trials come, to count it all joy, I don't think I can do that. Some people would look at that and they would say, that is absolutely stupid. I mean, that's totally unrealistic. Why would you count it joy when you have trials? And they would dismiss the Christian faith right out of the gate because that just makes absolutely no sense. Now, let me just clarify one thing. Some may, yes, dismiss this as ridiculous or unrealistic. Like, who in their right mind is going to consider it pure joy when there's pain in their life? This passage is not saying that we find joy in our trials. In the trial. He's not asking us to find something joyful about pain. He's not, you know, if your husband just went into ICUs and on a respirator, James is not saying you need to be joyful about that. That's not here what he is saying. In fact, Peter, I like the way Peter, he kind of expands on it. He says, rejoice when you encounter trials of various kinds. And what he says, in fact, I'll read it in 1 Peter. He says, in this you rejoice, so now for a little while, if necessary, you've been grieved. You've been grieved by various trials. Trials bring grief. So let's not be unrealistic about that. James is not saying you need to find joy in this thing that went wrong or this thing that went bad. No, there's something else. There's another focus where we find our joy, which is really important for us to see. And we'll see that as we go through this. Now, there's an interesting word there, and it's the word count. Now, when you see the word count, what's the first thing you think of? You probably think of math, right? And it's an interesting choice of words. Because what we need to do when trials come is we need to count. It means we need to consider, is what the word means. I don't know about you, but I think we all have a very similar initial response to trial. Here's my response to trial. Oh, no. Or, I can't believe this just happened. Or, you've got to be kidding me. Or, this is bad. That's our initial response to trial. And so what James here is saying to us, he's saying, you need to consider something in trial. And you're going to have to consider something. And so he's inviting us to look beyond our initial response, and we need to realize that our joy is not going to come from looking at the trial. That's not where our joy is going to come. So we have to count, we have to consider, we have to calculate. We have to figure out where the joy is to be found in this trial. Then the other word there is joy. So what are we looking for? What is joy? And I think it's interesting. He says, count it all joy. He doesn't just say count it joy. He says count it all joy. Some texts, I like the word. They said some phrase it this way. Count it pure joy. Pure joy. Joy with nothing added to it. Joy that's pure or all joy is joy at its core. And so as you think about joy, there's happiness and there's joy. And I think the easiest way to know the difference is happiness is always circumstantial. So there's nothing wrong with being happy about things. Okay? The sun's out, you're happy. Tomorrow it's cloudy, you're not happy, right? There's something good that happens financially. You're happy. There's something bad that happens. You're not happy about it. So happiness is always related circumstantially. Joy is never related to circumstance. Never. If you're finding your joy in a circumstance, if you're finding your joy in something that's transient, in other words, it's going to change, it could be here today and gone tomorrow, that's not the source of joy. Joy is able to exist in any trial. Otherwise, James wouldn't tell us to count it joy. And so, this is a key difference between joy. James is not saying here that I expect you to be happy about what happened. He's saying, but you can find joy in the midst of these circumstances. That's what he's saying. And by the way, it's impossible to do on your own. You won't do that yourself. Joy comes from something, from being in touch with something that we can't lose. It is not circumstantial. Here's how I would define joy. Joy is a feeling that I have, that you can have, that the Christian is supposed to have, from knowing that God is present with you and he has only good in store. It's a peaceful contentment knowing that God is with you and he's not going to harm you. He's going to prosper you, that God is going to see you through and he has good at the end. That is what joy centers around. So count it pure joy, count it all joy when you encounter trials of various kinds because you know, and here's what we need to know. We know that, here's the next phrase, the testing of our faith. The testing of our faith. So this is something that every trial does. Every trial tests our faith. And so what are the truths that are being tested? Is God still in control? That truth is being tested. The answer to that question is being tested. Is God still in control? Does God still care about me? That's being tested. Can I trust God in this situation? That's being tested. Is this going to end well? So all of those questions are being tested. And if your answer to any of those questions is no, you will not have joy. If you don't believe God's in control, if you don't think God cares about you because of the trial, if you can't trust God in this trial, if you don't think it's going to end well, then you're not going to be able to have joy. And so joy tests our faith. It tests our faith. One of my favorite cards I got when I was sick last month was from a good friend of mine. And on the card it said this. It says, if God brings you to it, then he'll bring you through it. If God brings you to something, he'll bring you through it. Do you believe that? You won't find joy in a trial if you can't believe that. And so it's a testing of our faith. And then notice what he says. For you know the testing of your faith is producing something. So now we're starting to get to the focus of where we find the joy. It has nothing to do, notice, it has nothing to do with the trial. It has everything to do with what the trial is producing in your life. And the word here is steadfastness. Steadfastness. That word means the ability to stand fast. So picture, you know, the wind's blowing or it's storming, and God is wanting us to be able to stand firm and fast, and so trials are producing the ability to stand fast. Now, let me just use a metaphor from the real world. So, physically, we know that if we're going to become stronger, then we need resistance in our life. I don't know if there are some of you have grown up in the locker room. I don't know if there's any bench pressers here. Probably don't want to admit it, but so bench pressing is this thing with guys, right? Like, so how much do you press? Well, I press 300 pounds. All right, I press 350 pounds. And by the way, December 29th, people keep trying to up the record. You know what the highest bench press was? 1,125 pounds. That's where you lay on your back and you see how much weight you can push up. And when you do that, what you'll do is during the week, you'll put enough weight so you can do 7 or 8 reps and you always have a spotter. You have a guy standing with his hands on the weights because on the lat, you always want to do the last one needs to be beyond your strength, and so you need the spotter. And he kind of just helps a little bit because that's what helps you increase to the next level. When you are pushing a weight that's beyond what you can do and you get the help of the spotter, the added resistance is what strengthens. And so we see this picture here. We see the picture of God bringing trials into our life which are beyond us, and in the analogy, God is the spotter. And so, what's he trying to do? He's trying to build strength into our lives. I mean, we understand that in the realm of the locker room. And so, in the realm of our spiritual lives and becoming stronger and growing, we see that trials are the resistance that produce this quality of steadfastness in our lives. This is how we gain strength. So James is saying, be joyful in trials. Not because trials are fun. I mean, I try and do an elliptical at my house. I wouldn't say there's anything fun about 30 minutes on the elliptical. Okay? I mean, what's fun about this motion for 30 minutes, right? And working and sweating, where the joy comes is in what it produces, in the health, the ability to do other things, the ability to feel good. And so we see here, it's the outcome is the place we find our joy. It's in the outcome, not in the pain of the trial. It's in the outcome. Verse 4, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Now you look at that word perfect. Now it's interesting, the word, when you read the word perfect, you see that what God is trying to make you perfect. And people will say that word really means mature. So they kind of tone it back and to say, it doesn't mean that you're perfect, it means that, you know, you're mature. But there's something in this word that is perfect, and I want to remind us of something. God's goal for your life is not simply to become mature. It's not simply to become pretty good. God's goal for your life is absolute perfection. God will settle for nothing less than to bring you and I to a state of perfection, because we are His creation, we are His workmanship, and He is working. You know, God doesn't create anything that's kind of good or just about perfect. When God does something, it's perfect. And so the reality is, yeah, we're not going to achieve that in this lifetime, but let us not forget that God's ultimate goal brings us beyond being very good or pretty mature. God's ultimate goal will be perfection in our lives. And so we see Him producing that in our lives as we walk through this life, and He is going to use trials. He is going to use trials in our lives to bring us to that place. And so, you know, practically, when a trial comes into our lives, if we're in touch with this passage, we should be saying, you know what? This is going to be hard. This is going to be miserable. This is going to be difficult. But God is going to do something at the end of the day. And so that brings me to point of application. So back in November, I came down with COVID. I had a 3-week bout with it. Ended up a few days in the hospital. Obviously, that was a learning experience for me in terms of trial. Which was kind of ironic was, this is the text I was studying during that time. And so I'm walking through this trial, and I'm studying this text. And so let me just share with you in terms of application in these minutes we have left. Let me share with you what I learned what I learned about myself and what I learned about this text. I would love to tell you that when I got the call that I was positive for COVID after 6 days of miserableness, there's nothing joyful about fever and body ache and nausea. There's just nothing joyful about it. And so I finally found out, you have COVID. And so I think I probably had my initial response, oh no. And so what's going to happen? Well, James here says, count it all joy. You need to take some time to consider what I may be doing. And so I entered into this period of counting. And just trying to get on top of this. And I have to tell you, it was not easy. It was not easy at all. A couple of weeks ago, we were in our staff meeting. We were studying a psalm. And It said, he knows our frame, that we are but dust. And so here's one of the things I want to say that I experienced, and maybe you experienced in trial. When trials come, I'm often confronted with my weakness. I do not like to be sick. I like to be active, I like to be healthy, and so when my health goes, it's a real challenge, let me tell you. And so, you're struggling, sometimes you're in a trial, sometimes it's hard to read the word, sometimes it's hard to pray, sometimes it's even hard to think. And some of you who have had COVID may know that it can do a number on your mind. And you know you're not thinking right, and you're trying to grasp this text, and it's just like you can't get there. Just can't get a hold of this. You can't count it all joy. And yet we read Romans 8:26, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know how to pray as we ought. You know, we don't even know how to pray in those times sometimes. Sometimes we feel like we can't even pray. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings that cannot be expressed in words. I was discouraged in terms of how long it took me to get to a point where I could consider it pure joy. I was probably 2 weeks into this thing before I felt like I finally could grab hold of this text. So what about those first 2 weeks? Well, the Spirit was ministering on my behalf because I was too weak. Sometimes that's just how it is in the midst of trial. That's why it's such an amazing truth that we have the Spirit of God in us when we're weak to carry us and to minister on our behalf and to intercede for us on our behalf. But I finally got there where I could count it all joy. And so how did I get there? What did I have to count? When we were first married, we bought furniture, and we bought furniture at auctions. We didn't have much money. I think we spent $75 for our first living room setup. A couch, chairs, table, and they all needed to be refinished. They were old. Some of them have layers of paint on them. Some of them had layers of varnish that had yellowed. And so what did we do? I went and bought this stuff at the hardware store called Stripper, right? Furniture Stripper. And you put this stuff on, and it strips. It loosens all the old stuff that's accumulated. And then you scrape it off, and you get down, and you realize this is a beautiful piece of furniture. The original wood is so beautiful. But you gotta use Stripper to get there. Trials is a stripper. And it'll strip off things in your life, and it will reveal attitudes and purposes and goals that you have in your life that are not in line with what God would have. And so here are three truths, three places I had to get back to in order to experience joy. And I want you to think back to your goal and purpose in life, because if your goal and purpose in life isn't right, then you won't be able to count it all joy in the midst of trial. So here are the three things, the three places that God brought me to. Number one, I had to get back to believing that God is always working for my good. God is always, 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 I can't say it enough times, he is always working for your good. I don't care what's going on, what you have, what trial. Here's a challenge. Do you believe? When that trial comes, in your mind are you going, God, you're going to use this for my good. You're doing this for my good. If you lose sight of that, you will not have joy in the midst of trial. Romans 8:28, God works all things together for good, right? God works all things together for good for those who love him. So if you're a child of God, then you have this truth that no matter what trial comes into your life, God will work it for good. That was an incredibly important truth for me to get in touch with. It says here that in trial, notice the last phrase, that you would be lacking in nothing. You would be lacking in nothing. But you say, but God, I just lost what? I just lost my health, and I'm supposed to be preaching my Christmas series for the next 4 weeks, and God, I just lost whatever it is, fill in the blank. Because in trial, you always lose something, right? You know what? If you lost it, you don't need it. And you may want to write that down. If you lost it, then you don't need it. You might think you need it, but you don't need it. Because if you needed it, God would have kept it. God would have preserved it. Will you trust me in this, that I am working something for good? So that's my first question. Do you believe in every trial that has come and will come into your life that God is working for your good? Here's the second thing, the second place, the second purpose. And by the way, it is a great purpose to desire the very best in life. I would never apologize for, I think that's what God would call us to, and to believe that we'll find that only in him, only what he has for us. And so trials become a part of that. Yeah, they're hard, but they're part of the goodness of what God is doing in us. Here's the second thing. God is always developing my character. So is that your purpose in life? God, would you develop my character in my life? Is that one of your life goals, that God would be doing that? He didn't save us to leave us where we are. His goal, as we saw, is perfection, to complete us. Now, Romans 28, the latter part says that, you know, God is working all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Now, that should catch our attention, right? If we're talking about life purpose. So, what is that life purpose? Verse 29, that we would be conformed to the image of his son. That we would be conformed to the image of his son. So question number two, is your life purpose and goal to become more like Jesus? And are you willing to evaluate everything that comes into your life in light of that goal? So whenever something comes, the first question, when I get a positive diagnosis with COVID, my first thing, God, is there some way in which you might use this to make me more like Christ? I remember when we lost a 5.5-year-old little girl, stillborn, our second child, the difficulty of that. And then I saw through the years how God used that to allow us to identify with many other people in their loss. I remember at age 49 hearing the C word, finding out I had prostate cancer. I've had deeper empathy with people who have heard that word, hundreds of people over the years. I remember when I developed allergies, chemical allergies, to a fuel oil deal in the parsonage where we were living. And I remember people coming into church talking about the fact that they couldn't handle the carpet, and instead of rolling my eyes, I go, yeah, I know. I know what chemical allergies are like. They're real. I remember spending 3 days at Abbott Northwestern in Minneapolis with low back pain. Whenever I hear someone has low back pain, I pray for them often. chronic back pain can be one of the most depressing things in people's lives. I had atrial fib. I had to have heart surgery for that. I know people who say, yeah, my heart's been out of rhythm. I'm so tired. I go, I know what that's like. Every trial in my life, God has used to prepare me to be a more sympathetic, prayerful, caring pastor. Jesus is a sympathetic, you know, what does it say? He's our sympathetic high priest because he experienced everything we have, all of it, all of the trials of life. And so what's my goal? Is it to avoid trials so my life is more comfortable? Or is it to say, God, whatever you want me to walk through so I can become a more compassionate, caring person, then I'm willing to do that. That's a pretty big question. By the way, I remember looking out on Thanksgiving, sitting in all alone in a hospital room and praying for people, thousands of people that were in a similar situation, separated from family. It's Thanksgiving, the tables are full, and you're eating hospital food. Well, that's not where I wanted to spend Thanksgiving, but I'll tell you, it developed a level of compassion in my heart and enabled me to better care. It enabled me to be more like Jesus. So could you ask that question? Anytime something hard comes, God, is it possible you're going to make me more like Jesus? And here's the last one. The last thing I realized is that God is always seeking to draw me closer to Him. He's always seeking to draw me closer. You know, if your life goal is not to be with Jesus, then you need to look at your life goal. The ultimate goal of our life is to meet Christ. Jesus prayed, Father, I can't wait for the day when they're with me in my glory. That has to be our bottom line goal. And we can't live out our lives here losing sight of that goal. You will not be able to count it all joy if you don't realize that the ultimate thing God is trying to do in our lives is to draw us closer. And He'll take away just about anything to do that. Philippians 1:21. Paul says, he's in jail, it's a tough time, and he goes, you know what, I could die here. You ever been in a situation where you go, you know what, I could die here? And what does Paul say? You know what, that would be better. I get to be with Christ. That was his goal. And so he wasn't afraid of death. He was joyful in those situations because he was actually thinking, I could die here and be with Jesus. I mean, that sounds pretty radical, but that's how the Christian faith is. That's the truth that we have, that we are going to be with Jesus. And I remember being in that hospital room when I had pneumonia in both lungs, and I'm going, God, this can't be the end for me. We just bought a house in Minocqua. My wife, she can't handle that house and everything. And my grandkids, I got grandkids that are only 2 years old. They won't even remember me. It can't end here. They need me. And it's like God said, no, they don't. They need me. They don't need you. I'll supply for them. I'll provide for them. And so God reminded me that it's okay. It's okay to go home. It's okay to meet Jesus. It's okay to be in His presence. And so God is continually pulling our tight gripped hands off of the things of this world. And He does that through trial. You know, I'll just conclude. One of those nights, I would wake up at 3 in the morning, and I swore this virus was demonic. I would have things coming at me, thoughts, and I just felt like I was being attacked. And I was just crying out to God, and he gave me a picture that I just hung on to some of those hard nights. And it was a picture of Jesus as my shepherd. And he just, the Lord has done this for me in the past, just given me something to hold on to when I'm struggling in the midst of a trial. And he said, look, I'm your shepherd. Just stay right here by me. You'll be fine. Just stay with me. And so when I knew I wasn't thinking clearly and I had all this stuff coming at me, I would just go back to that picture. And I would just see myself nipping at the heels of Jesus. And like, I don't know what's going on out there. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know if I stay right here with Jesus, I'm going to be okay. He's the one that created the universe. I think he can take care of me. And if he's inviting me just to stay close, and that's just what I'm going to do, I don't have to understand where this is going to end and what's going to happen. And about week two, I finally experienced the joy in the trial. And I just had a contentment. It was joy, is what it was. It was just, I had such a contentment, deeper than, I don't know if I've experienced anything deeper, but it was just this settledness. The Lord had me, and it was going to be good. The Lord has, I want to say that to you, the Lord has you as one of his children, and it's going to be good. Will you believe that? Will you trust that? Father, we thank you for this passage. It's so simple and so powerful and so hard for us. Because we get our hearts and minds set on the things of this world, all the circumstances, and Father, you're inviting us to go beyond that and to trust you as a God who's always working for good, who's always seeking to develop who we are and our ability to care for others around us. And Father, that you are a God that is always seeking to draw us closer to you. Father, might that be your experience in Jesus' name. Amen.